Waits for No Man, a short story by Grant Davis. Put it down to youth and high spirits, or plain stupidity, or failing to get a weather forecast and asking about tide times. Whatever the reason, it made no difference now. My heart clattered in my chest as I surveyed the three cliffs with the rain driving in my face. A few straggling gulls came in from the sea, gamely finding refuge in the scant few clefts of rock. I looked back the way I had come and surveyed a mile of rocky beach now at half tide, a mass of boulder rocks, wet and treacherous. Using a suitable piece of driftwood under my arm as a crutch, I forged ahead forward again. There was little else for it. The way ahead was mostly sandy beach, broken by the odd boulder, which could be skirted. The question was whether there was any way to leave the beach if I carried on. As I let my gaze fall down from the sheer cliff face, I noticed a large gap in the rock at the back of the beach. It looked like a cave. My dilemma deepened. Now I had two choices. Previously, going back was out of the question, leaving me only one choice. The cave suggested something to me, not rescue, because although the cave might protect me from the storm, I might well drown in the advancing tide. On the other hand, I might never find a passage off the beach if I continued. I weighed the choices carefully and my broken foot made my decision. I hobbled towards the mouth of the cave, half dragging my leg behind me. A fall of sea-worn rocks lay at the mouth of the cave over which I hauled myself, finding relief from the wretched weather. I sat panting and sweating, rain pouring off my hair and into my eyes. I lay there for a good 10 minutes, minutes I was probably wasting. I heaved my body further back into the cave and listened to the crashing sea in the distance mix with my rasping breath. As I lay back, my arm hit something which moved and fell. Driftwood, I told myself. As my eyes adjusted to the gloom, I found a few smaller pieces and scraps of old sailcloth, all passably dry. I could make a torch and maybe find refuge from the tide in the far reaches of the cave. I rolled from side to side, searching for the lighter I usually carried in one of my pockets. Suddenly, a shadow passed over the mouth of the cave and dread gripped my heart as I fancied a massive road breaker in advance of the tide flooding the cave. The shadow resolved into a silhouette and a figure approached. Hello, I called out hoarsely. Is anyone there? Yes, hi. Where are you? I sat up and waved my arm frantically. Here, further back, on the right. The silhouette took on detail and I saw a young woman's figure. As arms outstretched, she negotiated the rocks in the entrance. Are you okay? She asked. Like myself, she was soaked through, her long hair matted, running water rivulets onto her face, neck and clothes. Panting, she stood before me. She was even less suitably dressed than myself. Denim shorts and a t-shirt, with a small monogram over her left breast. I pointed down to my ankle. I think I might have broken my foot. Are you any good with that sort of thing?
No. The tide's coming in, she pointed out.
I know. So which way did you come from? I didn't see you just now.
I came from the village.
She turned to the mouth of the cave and pointed to the right. Can we make it? I came from the left, across the rocks.
No wonder you broke your foot. It's doubtful you'd make the village from here before the tide gets you. The cave's your only hope.
But surely the water fills the cave, doesn't it? I mean, I hope not, but the ceiling looks smooth and water-worn. She sat down, her sodden clothes clinging to her shivering form.
It's okay. You'll be fine. There's a sanctuary built into the back of this cave.
Relief flooded through me. The throbbing in my foot seemed to subside a little, and suddenly I felt less exhausted. She pointed to the driftwood.
It's a bit damp, but I think you can still make a fire and get dried out. You'll have to sit the tide out, I'm afraid. You have about half an hour or so till the tide reaches you here.
Both sailcloth and driftwood were dry enough to take to flame, and soon the crags and rocks threw shadows which leapt and danced in rhythm to the blaze.
As I piled on more wood, my clothes steamed in the heat and I felt a warm glow of optimism course through me. I would survive, no question, and passing a few hours in the company of a young woman would make the coming hours more tolerable. "My name's Richie," I said, extending my hand. But the young woman just sat with her arms around her, hugging herself, still dripping from the rain. She didn't take the proffered hand, but stared into the flames and distantly said, "Emily." "Nice to meet you, Emily." The flames now began to roar, the driftwood crackling and the smoke rising to the roof of the cave, finding its way up through the entrance. "Well, at least we won't suffocate from the smoke, so tell me about this sanctuary." She let her arms fall, unwrapping herself, then pointed to the rear of the cave.
"Up the back there, see that small hole? That sort of tunnel. You have to crawl in there. There's a ladder. You climb the ladder and it goes into a room. The sea won't reach it. Sometimes they put packets of dried fruit there, but the kids come down here and steal it. I try to scare them off when I see them, but that's not often."
"Well, how do you know about it?"
"I saw them build it."
"Who's them?"
"The council. It was built 9 years ago. 9 long years.
"Why?"
She returned to hugging herself, knees under her chin. "Councillor Hargreaves. He lost a child, drowned in this cave. It wasn't the first time it had happened either."
"So how did this Hargreaves get this through the council?"
"He said it was bad for tourism, deaths on the beaches. Of course he had his motives. Anyway, he got the council to find the money and had it built. It's saved 3 people since."
"Get closer to the fire," I suggest. "Dry off. You'll be more comfortable."
"I'm okay," she replied.
We sat listening to the approaching water, and then I dozed for several minutes, whereafter I woke with a start, twitching my leg and sending spasms of pain up from my damaged foot. Emily looked at me, wiping water from her eyes.
"Another 15 minutes, I guess, and then the water reaches the fire."
"Well, I suggest we get warm and dry. It's going to be a long wait." Emily nodded.
"So, Richie, are you here on holiday or are you local?"
"On holiday? You don't imagine a local getting caught out by the tide like this, do you?" She laughed gently.
"No, but it's happened though. Do you have any food in case the packet of dried fruit has been taken?"
I now laughed. "Kendall mint cake, the adventurous cure-all. Tastes like nothing on earth, but it's meant to be sustaining."
"And what does Richie do for a living?"
"Richie's a photographer. Small press and magazine shoots. You know, nothing glamorous, I'm afraid. But it pays the bills and keeps me out of mischief."
"But not out of trouble."
She nodded in the direction of the incoming tide. "Do you have a torch or anything?" I asked.
"No, nothing. I too was rather caught out by the tide."
"You should have known better," I chided. "Being a local and knowing what you know."
"Yes, well, you got that right."
"So what do you do?" I asked. I'd begun to change my position. I could hear the water crashing against a rockfall at the mouth of the cave and looked at my watch. If Emily was right, I would have another 10 minutes or more, then would have to crawl to the back of the cave. Before I did that, I wanted to make the most of the warm and spacious conditions, enjoy it before being cramped in a cold bolt hole at the rear of the cave. She didn't reply to my question, so I asked another. "How big is a sanctuary? It will take 2 people, won't it?" She cleared the matted hair from her eyes and nodded.
"I understand it will take a party of 6 easily. Double that number, but it would be a squeeze. The last time it was used, it saved a young couple. They didn't know it was there to begin with. They only found it as they moved further and further back."
I was now mostly dry, although my back felt damp. I eased myself into a position to allow the heat to warm it.
"Move closer to the fire," I urged again. "We don't have long and you're still soaking." "I'm fine," Emily said. "I'll be fine."
I'd kept my eye on a large pool in the cave. As soon as its tranquil surface became disturbed, I knew the water would be finding its way in, and then I would have to move. And what about you?
What about me?
What does Emily do?
She studies the sea, the tides, and the crabs when they come out.
A marine biologist or something, I ventured.
Or something.
We sat in silence for another minute or two, my gaze fixed intently on the pool. I fancied I saw a ripple. Maybe it was a fish or a small gust of wind. Then suddenly there it was, a true flush of water, and an unmistakable ripple appeared. That's it, I said, we're moving. Emily followed my gaze and we both saw the water in the surge pool. I struggled to stand and put my makeshift crutch under my arm.
You'll have to hurry. It comes in a bit suddenly now.
Yes, can you help me at all?
You'll have to manage on your own. At the back there you'll find a small man-made tunnel. Use a bit of burning driftwood to light the way.
I shrugged my rucksack onto my shoulder and picked up a burning brand. The light leapt around in the far reaches of the cave, sending mad shadows dancing around the walls. The entrance to the sanctuary was more visible.
Not far, I urged, but you'll have to hurry.
She stood up, water coursing down her clothes, and skillfully negotiated the route to the back of the cave. I followed, half climbing, half stumbling over the rocks. I turned back to see the waves already crashing into the mouth of the cave. Waving the torch around, I could barely make out the foot of the ladder sunk into the wall of the entrance of the sanctuary, but there it was, as Emily had promised. I uttered a silent prayer of thanks to Councillor Hargreaves, my saviour. Emily pointed the way in.
There you go. Climb to the top of the ladder. There's a sort of room in there, carved into the rock.
No, you go first. I'll slow you down.
I can't. You must go in now.
There was a barely audible hiss as the water flooded in and rushed over the burning embers, extinguishing them.
What do you mean you can't come in? Hurry, Richie, get in. Why aren't you coming? You go first.
She looked at me hard with sad, watery eyes. Then it all made sense. The sounds of the sea stopped, and waves stood still momentarily. As I realised what was happening to Emily, the clothes and hair that would never dry out, the monogram on her T-shirt. E.H. Emily Hargreaves. Daughter of Councillor Hargreaves? Emily nodded and glanced back at the advancing water.
You can't come in, can you? I asked.
No.
Because this wasn't built back then 9 years ago, was it, when you were last here?
No. Please hurry. She was right. The water was only feet from where I was standing. I ducked my head and hobbled into the small tunnel. At the foot of the ladder, I turned and faced the young woman.
There's nothing I can do, is there? I cried over the noise.
She shook her head and glanced back at the water. When she turned back to me, her face was a mask of apprehension and fear.
No, I have to do this alone.
Each high tide.
Each high tide, she confirmed.
Thank you, I said softly. Thank you, Emily Hargreaves. Thank you for this place. But I don't think she heard me, as she had already turned again to face the gathering waves. I sat shivering in the sanctuary, hands clamped over my ears, but the sounds filtered through, a furious ocean which pounded angrily and roared in unfettered temper at the foot of the ladder. Beyond the sanctuary, it was already embracing the girl with the regularity and the metronome precision she had grown to expect without growing used to. I tried to block all sounds, all noises. I fancied I might have heard something terrible, and please God, please tell me I'm wrong. Please tell me it was the sound of boiling white water and hissing foam, seasoned with imagination, and that I never heard those anguished and lonely cries in the darkness.
That was Waits for No Man, a short story by Grant Davis.